You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, the body, our planet, really everything having to do with our collective human existence here on planet Earth. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living, and I'm here today with my co-host,
Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant.
You can hear today's show and any past show of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com. We are so excited today, Julie, because we are speaking about really everything. On Reality Sandwich, as we say, we bring you a palatable taste of the truth and the truth about what's going on in our world with respect to healthful living. And on the Healthful Living website, we speak about that with regard to all things in life and how are we humans doing with regard to how we're being, how we're living, how we're connecting with one another in a way that serves ourselves and serves the future. And as we look around today in our world, we're getting more and more feedback about certain ways of being, certain practices, certain systems that aren't really serving us in the most healthful ways. So our focus today has turned many of us around the world and both within our side ourselves are making a more conscious choice, being a bit more aware about how we're being, how we're doing, what we're consuming, all these different truly important introspective questions that we speak about every week on the show. So to that point, to that end, we're here today with James Elson. He is the CEO of SustainLane.com, an independent green media company where you can go on there and get all the information you need to know about identifying sustainable solutions, sustainable products, companies that are pursuing sustainable ways, thoughts, ideas, information. There's just so much going on your website. We want to welcome to the show, welcome to Reality Sandwich, James Elson.
Thank you, Martin. Good to be here, Julie.
Thanks.
So where should we begin? Number one, as I was just speaking about, there's a tremendous need for what you're doing on the planet, what's happening here. Where does your story begin with what's your background and what is it that's brought you now to say, you know what, I have got to get this thing going, and you've, such that you've now created this incredibly successful website, SustainLane.
No, that's a big question.
Let's start with a big question.
I think my story for SustainLane starts sort of around 2003, and my background is in technology and business, and I had found myself in Silicon Valley for about 10 years by that time, making lots of money for other companies that really weren't doing much in the world that had intrinsic value. And I found myself a bit exhausted, not many healthy relationships in my family or my friends, really in an unhappy place, although I had reached the pinnacle of my career. So there was a bit of a disconnect as far as what I was told would make me happy and having achieved that, being in a place of not really being very happy. So I had an opportunity to sort of step off that corporate track for a while, and I did a bit of traveling, and I found myself down at a place called Esalen in Big Sur, where for anyone had been has been down to Esalen, you know that strange things happen at Esalen. And some of those strange and wonderful things happened to me. I got introduced to some incredible people like Hazel Henderson and Amory Lovins and Paul Hawken, and started thinking about what was really important to me, and surrounded by all the natural beauty and the spiritual energy of a place like Esalen, I got to thinking more about how I wanted to make a contribution for the rest of my career, and how I could utilize what I had built so far to bring that energy and background and network to help. At the time, it wasn't really called the green movement; it was more the environmental movement. But to work in that space because I really love it. I'm really driven by it. It's where my heart is and my passion is, and I was excited about creating a business, because I love business. I think business has a very bad name. I think business can be used for a very good purpose. Mm-hmm. I guess I wanted to, in my own mind, redeem business and create a business that was thoughtful, compassionate, caring, integrated with its community and employees, and ultimately served a purpose that was useful on the planet, as opposed to making another widget faster, better, cheaper, and making a handful of people more and more money.
Right. I'm hearing a switch that took place for you, somewhere where this deep need for meaning and purpose kind of struck. You had mentioned that you were doing what you were told to be doing in a life and a career, and then something shifted for you, and you said, you know what, I want to do what I feel like doing.
Right. I went to good schools and I worked hard and I climbed the ladder and I did what all of my peers seemed to be doing at the time. But when we all went out on Friday, we never really talked about sort of the elephant in the room, which is we really weren't happy. Mm-hmm. This is not what we would be choosing to do if we didn't have to work. And I think more and more so, particularly here in the Bay Area, we really see people choosing paths that are aligned with their passions. They're stepping off an investment banking path and they're going to teach, or they're leaving some corporate job and they're creating community gardens. It's a really exciting time to be alive in this era and thinking about how we create the lives that mean something to us and impact those around us.
Right. Now, do you suspect this is stemming both from individuals waking up, so to speak, and getting a sense of this feeling inside themselves, as well as a shift in our world circumstances and systems that aren't really serving people, or breakdowns?
I think so. I think it's happening on a conscious and an unconscious level. I think that I read something in the New York Times not long ago that said that by 2010, 50% of America will be on antidepressants. Mm. That's a pretty big statement, and that says a lot. And I certainly know many, many people that are on antidepressants, and it's become a lifestyle, a way of life for us, rather than try and understand at the root why is it that we're not being fulfilled or happy. I think that there are forces I think 9/11 was huge. I think Katrina was huge. I think the elevated knowledge about global warming is huge. I think that there are a lot of people that feel like we're on a train headed over a cliff and that there must be something that we can do to change that direction. Mm-hmm. And people are opting off the train. And right. It's really exciting because they're right. Creating some phenomenal organizations, both from a for-profit and a non-profit, and even in the government sector, we're seeing real agitation. So it's really a wonderful time, I think.
About 6 months ago, we had author Harrison Shepherd on the show about his new book, The Consumeritis Epidemic.
Mm.
And he explains things in terms of society's addiction to consumption, endless consumption. And he gets into kind of, you know, some of the components of what's brought that about and what's are you finding some of that and kind of in your observations that people seem to be addicted to maybe blind consumption of just goods and stuff?
Yeah, I always get a little bit shy to talk about society as a whole. I think from Americans' perspective, we do have a very much of a culture of consumption. And I think a lot of that culture is driven by big business because it drives our economy. And I think they play in general on a lot of real elements of emptiness that some people feel. And as a way to fill that emptiness, we can consume. We can go to the mall. We can feel better. For myself, I was an overweight kid and still struggle with weight my whole life. And part of the way that my family used food and the way I've learned to treat food is as an emotional crutch. So, whether I'm happy or I'm sad, there's something to eat. So, I understand how interwoven it is into my psychology personally. And so it's not a really easy problem to fix. A lot of people talk about, hey, how about this green movement? If you buy a hemp shirt, that's going to save the world. And they kind of, mock at that, saying that consumption is not the answer to consumption. I believe that there is there's a path back from this crazy consumption where everyone's maxed out on their credit cards and we're buying all this junk from China, which now we're finding out is tainted in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And not even talking about a lot of these products in China are made by children in unsafe environments. And I think that we need to reel it back a little bit. So, yeah, go buy the hemp shirt and start understanding why hemp is better than polyester made of oil. Ask the questions about why you should spend more money for a gallon of milk because it doesn't have bovine growth hormone in it, and start going to your PTA meetings and asking what kind of milk they're serving to your children in school. Is it organic or is it non-organic? So I think consumption can be a path back from consumption if it's intelligent and you're understanding how your products are made. And more so, it's about where they're made. And I think one of the most exciting things to me in this whole sustainability green movement is a move back toward local community. And a lot of these movements are coming together, local living. There's an organization in San Francisco called Bali It's a Business Alliance for Local Living, run by a great guy named Don Schaefer. And they talk a lot about building local community back into a fabric where you're talking to your neighbors again, you're shopping at farmers markets, mm-hmm. you're supporting the mom and pop hardware store as opposed to going to the mega store. And it really makes a difference because these local communities keep their money locally in the community rather than take it out either internationally or to some headquarters, based somewhere not near you.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, long answer, but consumption can be an answer to consumption.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, these are things that when we speak of the co-creation of a healthful living community, I mean, these are all sort of these notions of re-educating us that we are at conscious choice about all the things that we do. And we've all gotten into these patterns of consumption or ways of being where we're shopping that we've all learned mainly because we were educated by the people selling us those things.
Sometimes I get this sort of all or nothing thing. So people on the opposite side of this green movement might say, well, we have to buy things, and somehow we're suggesting that buying nothing is a solution. No, we're saying a new way of buying something, like you said, an awareness or an understanding of how to buy something that actually supports us, the local community, the families, the farmers, those kinds of things. So, to me, it's usually some sort of a gray area solution, not an all or nothing thing. And when people are trying to polarize people, they always kind of go to the opposite extreme. And, of course, that's not what we're saying here. So we're not saying you should never consume anything. Like you said, we're just saying we should be aware of what we're consuming.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. And so then the question comes, well, how do you know what those things are?
Right.
And so SustainLane is a green media company. We have several media properties. And one of our media properties is a review site at SustainLane.com. What it is a place for your listeners or anyone really to come to and to share what they know about what's going on in their local community. So maybe there's a little ice cream shop that uses organic milk that no one would know about unless you live right next door to it. And they can list it and they can write a little review about it. And then you can come to it not knowing that person, type in a zip code and find that business. What characterizes a lot of these small businesses is that they're not very sophisticated when it comes to marketing and sales, or the web for that matter, and they don't have a lot of time and budget for marketing and advertising. They're too busy running their business, and they're typically very passionate entrepreneurs who have a vision that they want to achieve something, and they want to achieve more than just making money. They have to make money because that's the sustainability of their own enterprise, but they're looking to support family farming, or they're looking to create local textile work again, or union jobs, or one of the many, many things that have left our fabric of our society, and they're looking to bring that back. So at SustainLane, we have 14,000 of those businesses listed nationwide, and we add hundreds every week, and anyone can go there and add one. So I would invite your listeners to do that.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you is how does a business get onto the site? How does somebody become connected?
Yeah, well, it's as easy as that. And one of the things you'll hear a lot about is how do you know what a green business is, or how do you know what a sustainable business is? I think, I can say this pretty certainly, there is no sustainable businesses. I haven't met the sustainable business yet. Even great businesses like Patagonia, they're using stuff in some of their materials that's not sustainable. And they'll be the first people to say that. They're a very high integrity business. So what do we need to do to get to sustainability? We need to just keep moving along the curve. And there are clearly businesses that are unsustainable. Ones that dump toxins in rivers are not very good businesses. What we're trying to do is create a transparency where anyone can go to the site and write about what's going on at that business, whether you're an employee of that company and you happen to know something that people should know about a business if they're saying they're green, or you're a neighbor to the business and you know what a great family-owned operation it is and you want to tell people about it. It's the model of wisdom of crowds. There's a great book written by James Sarecki called The Wisdom of Crowds, and it was talking about how if you take thousands of inputs that are independent, you end up with a solution that's better than the solution you get if you pick the opinions of just the smartest people. Mm-hmm. And I think what you see today is a lot of green certifications coming out for businesses. And there are so many. I think there were 12 at my last count. Mm-hmm. And from a small business perspective, there's just no way that you can spend your time getting certified by 12 different agencies. You see this happening now with farmers and the organic mm-hmm. label, where they're saying it doesn't mean anything anymore. They're already doing biodynamics. They're mm-hmm. down the path doing way higher value farming. and they don't want to spend the time or money and get their organic certification. So that begs the question, well, then how do you know? And the only way to know is to sort of go back before all this technology was created, and you talk to your neighbors,
mm-hmm.
right? You share information. It's word of mouth, and it tends to be pretty accurate when you start getting dozens or hundreds of people talking about a product that they purchased from a store that, you know, changed their lives. Like we painted our house not too long ago with some non-VOC paint, and I was amazed that we were able to sleep in the house after it was painted, and you couldn't even smell the paint.
Mm.
And it was YOLO, I think, was the brand, and it was a great little place in Berkeley that you could find on our website if you go type it in. But there are so many products out there that are being recreated today. Literally thousands and thousands of new products are being recreated because they were created in the 20th century, where our model was, you know, you take some group of chemicals without any real regard to what they do to you or the environment. You heat them and mix them together and beat them up, and you end up with a product that ends up in landfill in not too long, and is usually toxic to the groundwater. That model is an old model.
Mm-hmm.
New model, and we're seeing this being pushed really aggressively in the EU, in Japan, even in Canada, where they're not letting manufacturers sell products like computers anymore that have mercury and nickel mm-hmm. and lead and all these toxic metals, because at the end of the day, they end up as a social problem for those countries. So now we're seeing manufacturers like Dell and HP creating entirely new assembly lines that don't use these toxic materials. You have companies like GE that actually do more of their business outside America than they do inside America. And Jeffrey Melt, the CEO of GE, has taken a very aggressive stance in wanting to create an entire green business inside of General Electric. And they know that if they can't sell their products into the EU, a 350 million person common market, that it's going to hurt them significantly. And they're already ahead of the curve because they're selling them those same products back into America because it doesn't make sense to have dual assembly lines for the same products. So America is a bit of a laggard here, but we're being pulled into it because of big global companies that realize they can't carry two tracks anymore of products, and the way of the future is closed-loop manufacturing, you know, full cycle, where before you build something, you think about what it's going to be at its end of its life. And one of the most beautiful models of this is Jeanine Benyus, who's one of my heroes, wrote a book called Biomimicry. And she talks about if you go out into nature, there is no waste. Everything that happens in nature is closed-loop cycle, and at the end of its useful life and it dies, it becomes food for something else that gets, you know, a mushroom growing off of a dead log or, you know, some model like that. And she's taken scientists out into the field, like into the Galapagos Islands, and looks at what's going on and how fish and spiders and moss function, and then they take those elements and they create an analogy for a product used today. Like, for example, spider silk is 10 times stronger in the tensile strength than Kevlar, which we use in police vests and tires and things. And the spiders make this in ambient temperatures eating organic material, where we use boiling pots of sulfuric acid. Right? It doesn't really make much sense. So many examples of this. And the stories, they're so fun to hear. Like the abalone shell is one of the it's harder than any ceramics that man can make or woman can make. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because these shells have evolved over millions of years. And they're, if you go out to the coastline here and you watch these otters, they dive for these abalone and then they float on their backs and they bang the shells with rocks to break them open to eat them. Well, the abalones have learned over evolution that the way to survive is to create these multi-layered shells that have soft and hard material and different hinges through their shells. So, you know, it's for their survival that it happens. But we learn from the abalone how to make, the hardest ceramics around.
Wow.
Anyway, it's a really great book. If anyone, you know, wants to pick it up, Biomimicry by Jeanine Benyus.
Wow.
You know, it's kind of as if the human race got so fascinated over the past 100 and some odd years with our ability to make stuff, you know, and to have a happier time for ourselves, that we completely forgot that we are also living organisms on this planet and that we have to be considerate of our implication on everything in life. And when companies develop products, which is based clearly on an economic model and, you know, making profit so you can do more of that, for so long they have given no consideration to what's going to happen to that product later down the road other than the for lack of a simple other term, the selfish need of getting that profit from having sold that product.
Or having no awareness that it's toxic or concern that it's, it might not even be that it's just profit, but just not thinking about another way to make it because they're not really thinking about the implications of it being toxic.
Right. But now that we're getting all that feedback, right, we're polluting, you know, half the planet, and people themselves are realizing that, wait a minute, this is hurting me or hurting my environment or hurting my community or hurting the economy in some ways. So there's both sides that are happening. Both we're getting this kind of wake-up call from the fire burning underneath us and this desire to be more consciously impactful in the world. So clearly people are needing to have more knowledge once they get back more at that place of choice. You know, you were saying before, like, we're all driving in this truck going at 100 miles an hour towards, you know, towards a brick wall. Well, many of us are realizing, like, okay, well, if that's happening, let's at least turn around and face the other direction, for one, and do whatever we can to hit the brakes.
Right. Yeah, I think you both nailed it. The 20th century saw the greatest creation of wealth ever, and the way that they did that was by liquidating the future.
Right.
And it was bound to have a bad ending, right? I think in the early part of the century, just take America, for example, the West was, you know, not quote-unquote tamed yet, right? Go West, young man, and create your new life. And you do that by cutting down a bunch of trees and creating some farming. And we're such a wealthy nation, and we're such a really a wealthy planet when you look at our resources, that it never seemed like we would run out of anything. And yet here we are pushing up against the end of timber, the end of oil, the end of clean water, clean air. Mm-hmm. And the canaries in the coal mine are going crazy. They're saying, hey, you put the brakes on. You guys need to start thinking about what you're going to do for the next 100 years. And I think that the 21st century, in a large part, is going to be a lot about remediation from what we created in the 20th century. The mindset of a paper mill, for example, I grew up in the Northeast, and so we used to go up to Maine a lot, and there's always be this horrible smell in these paper mill cities. And they would clear cut forests in their community, and then they would process these trees with incredible dioxins and unbelievable stuff, and they dump it right into the river. The downstream communities would get cancer. And then at some point in time, the paper mills would close up shop and leave because there were no more trees. And yet, when the environmentalists went in and tried to say something, the folks running the businesses were pretty clever. You know, they aligned the interests of the loggers and the people working in the paper mill against the environmentalists. So people actually were working against their own best interests because they were sold a story about jobs and, you know, schools and tax base, which all disappeared anyway. And now I think if you go back into some of these communities, you see a lot of this in Oregon. They realize what happened. And is one of the most exciting stories to me is in Portland is becoming the leader in the nation for exporting knowledge about green building and new technologies because they've needed to reinvent themselves and they've done a great job. And Mayor Potter is a huge proponent of this. And they create ideas like let's go out to the western part of the state or the eastern part of the state where we have a lot of depressed farming and create wind power. And have that wind power generate buildings in the Portland downtown area. And when the government buildings will guarantee that they'll buy the energy. So there's a business model for building the windmills. And then, by the way, we don't have to import any oil, which then our coal. We don't have to use coal for our power plants, which makes the air cleaner, which lowers childhood asthma rates. And then, by the way, we get the multiplier effect of the money staying in the economy. We have a stronger economy, and we're more self-contained and self-reliant. Mm. So everybody wins here except OPEC, you know, and people that are in the coal business. Mm-hmm. So these are the models of the future. And you see Mayor Nguyen doing it in Austin with his clean tech incubator. You see Mayor Hickenlooper doing it in Denver with his Million Trees program, where he's coordinated the private sector to pay for the trees and the public sector to have the schools and the children in the schools plant the trees so they're learning about nature. And then they're tree-lining streets that were hot and not very beautiful. And it's getting people out of their cars so they walk the streets. And they're floated bonds for public transportation to get people out of their cars. And they're thoughtful about building commerce around the transportation corridors so people don't have to take automobiles. So they're thinking about these things going forward. Mayor Daley's doing these things in Chicago with his green roofs. I think at last count they have something like 60 football fields worth of green roofs built in Chicago. And a green roof is taking one of these black tarred roofs that get really hot and have to be replaced every few years, and they plant grass on it and they put in trees, and they create it cools the city down. Mm. And one of his great things he likes to do is he said, you know, if we're going to do this green trees program in a green roofs program in Chicago, I want my building, the city hall, to have a green roof.
Wow.
And they put a beehive on it, and they make honey from it. And whenever VIPs come into the town, he gives them a jar of honey made from city hall's roof.
That's amazing.
People are thinking.
Yeah,
and it's fun, and people like that. I mean, you could be 5 years old or 50 years old, and it's really fun to get a thing of honey made, you know, locally.
Right.
It's smart.
Now, a theme I'm hearing here are mayors.
Yeah.
Yeah, mayors, local communities, focusing on what's in their own backyard, what they can do, how they can bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not hearing governors or even Department of Environment.
Right.
What's happening here in the U.S.?
Well, another one of our media properties is the U.S. City Rankings, and it's a ranking of the top 50 metropolitans in the United States based on their sustainability records. And we chose to do cities rather than states or the federal government, because in cities is where the rubber hits the road, right? Your Mayor Newsom in San Francisco, you've got real problems with public health, you've got problems with road repair, you're spending a lot of money, hundreds of millions of dollars on refurbishing buildings. So why not do that with solar panels? Why not use electric buses to improve air quality? Why not exchange all of your light bulbs with LEDs and traffic lights, which last 10 times as long as the current lights and use something like 70% less power, and they don't require road crews to come in changing lights all the time?
Mm.
These things make sense from a social perspective as well as an economic perspective, where I think sometimes in the larger scale you lose that attachment to the people. Sustain Lane, we're geared for developing media that educate, entertain, inspire, and also bring together communities so they can start sharing these ideas. And the mayors are really where it's at. They're doing really exciting things. I think that I would be remiss if I didn't put in a plug for Arnold Schwarzenegger, who I know has mixed records in these things, and some of the green community really don't like this guy, but he's supported AB 32, which was the most aggressive global warming bill in the nation and probably will get adopted into Congress. And because of the executive leadership in the state, the venture capitalist community and CalPERS, they're putting billions of dollars into clean technology, which you see in Silicon Valley, which is now starting to be called the Green Valley, because of their movement toward ethanol and solar and nanotechnology and wind technologies, because they know that their governor is putting in place legislation that's going to mandate the purchase of clean energy, and they want to be there for that prize. Renewable energies is a multi-trillion-dollar industry. What Arnold Schwarzenegger has also done is he's put California in a very competitive position, both nationally and internationally, for being an export state for a lot of these new technologies. And what you'll see about the green and sustainable movement is that it's exciting, it's inspirational, but it's also where business is going. So the businesses that move first to support and embrace this are going to really be the winners. And you don't have to look any further than the automobile industry to see why this is true. You have a company like Toyota that for 10 years invested behind hybrid technology and lost money in that R&D effort, now controls the hybrid technology market, and all American companies are licensing their technology. And Priuses, you know, you got to wait months to get one of these cars, while GM and Chrysler and Ford are hemorrhaging money and people, and to the extent where Wall Street's even wondering if these car companies are going to be around in another, 20 years or so. And these are were the backbone of our union jobs and our economy. And it's really a sad thing to go to Dearborn and see the 25% unemployment rate in some of the neighborhoods and all these huge factories that look like photos I've seen of Berlin after World War II. And I imagine what it would be like if the federal government came in and supported with grant money the refurbishing of all these factories, and they became solar panel factories and wind turbine factories. Mm-hmm. It would revitalize the entire region there around the Great Lakes. And it would put Detroit in a place where they've got unemployed labor that they can put back to work. It would be a little bit like the Apollo project was in the 60s to put a man on the moon, and all the energy that came out to support something like that. So I the potential is there, and it's going to happen. And the cities and mayors that move first, and governors that move first in this direction, they're going to reap the windfall. And the states and cities that don't, people aren't going to want to live there, because they're going to be using coal-fired power plants, and they're going to have high rates of autism and cancer and all the other diseases that accumulate and bioaccumulate in these regions that are not having an eye on their environment.
I think that profit is, people always think of sustainable things as not being profitable, and you're pointing out right here that that's actually really incorrect. It might be that we could have made it, quote, cheaper in the short term for a particular product, and the company might have been able to make a little more profit. But in the long term, and in all of the different healthcare systems and everything else that it's going to be impacting, it's really actually economical to be going to these new models. And I think that as people start to realize this and enact more legislation. See, before it was kind of the big profitable companies that had a lot of money, like the oil companies, influenced government and the legislation, and we went down this sort of negative path. Now, if the people begin to turn this around and say, no, this is what really is smart, there is a way to do it where it's sustainable and profitable for everybody.
Yeah, in fact, it's a big misnomer that to be green is to give away money or mm-hmm. to invest in SRI, socially responsible funds, is to accept a lower return on rate. I think the Winslow Fund has returned 60%, you know, the year before last or something.
Wow.
And they're invested in green or sustainable businesses. There was an organization in Canada and London that did a study exactly on this. And they ranked 100 institutions based on their green or sustainable records, and they ranked the same institutions on financial return. And what they found, surprisingly to them, was that they were almost identical lists. Mm. So, and when you think about it, it doesn't sound so weird, right? Because if you're a company that cares about your employees, the environment, a company that cares about sourcing from factories that don't employ children, a company that cares about the end product and what happens to their waste stream, chances are these aren't the same types of people that might be running a company, say like Enron, that is doing things on the margins mm-hmm. and a little shadowy. And, chances are they're not going to be companies that are going to have huge litigation against them for poisoning a community, mm-hmm. right? So it starts to make sense when you think about the mindset of sustainability. It's really, I know a lot of the work that you do is on holistic health.
Mm-hmm.
And sustainability is, it's a system, just like the holistic health of the body is a system. And mm-hmm. And to think about a business existing in isolation, which is what we've done for pretty much the 20th century, causes big problems. Because it's not in isolation, and we gave corporations tremendous power, and we gave them very little responsibility in all sorts of ways to get out of their responsibility, mm. that it was bound to be a tough ending to that book. We're going to see a lot of legislation in the 21st century that is going to be geared toward having businesses become more responsible for their actions. And in fact, you're seeing businesses take the lead here because they realize this is coming. Even companies like Dow are putting in huge amounts of money to look at non-toxic solutions and how they're going to be changing over their chemistry to green chemistry, which is something that Michael Brannert, does a lot of work on. And when you start looking at what's happened since World War II, we've created 80 to 100,000 synthetic chemicals mm-hmm. and put that into our environment, and less than 3% have been tested for biocompatibility.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael Brannert has created a green chemistry. It's a database that you can go if you're in manufacturing, and you can go look at the 68 or 69 chemicals that they've vetted as being safe and see what they replace. And then you can take it out in your manufacturing process. So they're going forward and doing the work. William McDonough is also part of this, and McDonough Brown, they do phenomenal work.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of people that are out there. We were talking earlier about Paul Hawkins' new book, Blessed Unrest, and he's talking about how this movement is the largest movement that's ever existed in the history of us being able to keep history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the coming together of social justice, environmental movement, and all sorts of movements around human potential and consciousness. And there are literally millions of organizations around the planet that are all working toward this goal. And another one of my heroes is right here in Oakland. It's a guy named Van Jones. And Van is working with the Ella Baker Center, is working on a green collar jobs program. And he talks a lot about how this next big economic movement should not leave the poverty sector behind. and should be able to create a pathway for green jobs for unemployed. And they're doing this in Oakland. And Mayor Dellum just passed, I think it's, if it's not passed, it's just passed one of their hurdles in getting $250,000 to fund this program. And Van had presented this in front of Congress. And there's a bill now on Congress floor. I think it's for $25 million to support this green collar jobs program across the United States. Wow. So, yeah, it's really exciting. So you're starting to see real movement here and real support at the highest levels. Politicians and business people, they listen to what the people say and want. They're not stupid.
Mm.
They want to get reelected or they want to make money,
mm-hmm.
or both.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to follow what the trend is. I look at my job with Sustain Lane as bringing together the voices of the people who want to see change happen. Because I found myself in Big Sur back in 2003 feeling like I was very alone and isolated, like I was the only one that had my viewpoints. And then I started meeting other people that felt the same way. And I thought, well, there's probably a lot of us out there that feel this way. But there was no means for me to connect with someone in Kentucky or in New Hampshire or up in Canada, for that matter, and be able to start having conversation. And the internet is just such an unbelievable mm-hmm. mechanism for the democratization of information and the collection of people with very different viewpoints that can come together. And when you bring people together, magic starts to happen. They start mm-hmm. having conversation. You start having economic power. You start having political voice. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring people together. We want them to support the businesses in their local communities. We want them to come out and explain what they think is possible and can happen. And that voice gets loud enough, you start seeing politicians responding. You know, if the demand for furniture, for example, bedding, that's not soaked in fire retardant and formaldehyde, when people understand what mm-hmm. those chemicals do and the off-gas in your houses mm-hmm. for up to 10 years, and you can go to the EPA, and the EPA will tell you that on the top five hazards for human health is indoor air quality.
Yes.
And it's just from your drapes and your rug and your couch and all these things. And why is that? Well, the fire-retarding community has very strong lobbies.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at mattresses, you'd be surprised to know that one of the most profitable, if not the most profitable element of a mattress, is the chemical.
Wow.
So mattresses become almost a vehicle for making money off of the fire retardant. I think that my wife and I, we bought a bed that doesn't have fire retardant and formaldehyde in it. And when I asked the woman at Lifekind, which is in Grass Valley, and at the time was one of the only organic bed manufacturers in the United States, and I said, well, so what do you do about fire retardant? And she said, oh, we use wool. and I thought, well, yeah, wool, right? Going back to sort of the natural substance.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so I'm excited about where we're going. And I think the possibility to do the right thing and make money is mm-hmm. right there. I think for the entrepreneurs that are out there on this path, they're going to do very well, because the segment of the population that's moving toward this path, they call LOHAS, Lifestyles of Health and Sustainability. These are people that are educated. They have some disposable income. They're willing to spend it behind their values. And they're sort of the leading edge of commerce. They're also the same people that advertisers want to talk with and businesses want to buy their products, because they're opinion makers in their communities.
Mm.
So we have the right edge of people to drive into the country. But it can't be a movement that's just about the rich and famous. Right, it has to float all boats, which is what Van Jones is saying, and I totally agree with him. To go into Whole Foods and spend $7 on half of a pint of organic raspberries, it's kind of a drag to have to do that, and yet I don't want the chemicals in my fruit. So my hope is that by people doing that, it makes enough of an economic incentive for other farmers to change their fields over to organics, which then hopefully will drive down the price of what an organic fruit costs. But I think that people need to understand that food should be more expensive. It shouldn't be cheaper. When you look at the pressure that we've put on food companies to provide us a meal for $2,
mm-hmm.
you have to know that the way they're getting to that $2 meal is they're feeding the animals sawdust, and they're
right.
pumping them full of hormones to get their weight up. And, at the end of the day, you eat that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've become so sensitive to the food that I'm eating and thinking about how it was raised. And fortunately, I can pay a few dollars more for a gallon of milk. But even if I couldn't, I would try and find ways to be active in my community to get the word out to more people, educate them and explain to them why food is so cheap today and why that's a bad thing and how it leads to obesity and diabetes and cancer and heart disease. And so you may only be paying $1.99 for that burger, but you know what? You're going to be in having a bypass mm-hmm. in 30 years or 40 years. And what's crazy to me is that our insurance policies and our plans, it supports the paying for the bypass.
Right.
But it won't subsidize me for going to get holistic care. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of on my own here.
Right.
If I want to take care of myself, I need to self-educate. I need to find my own healers. I need to pay for them out of pocket. And I do all that because I understand that the other path, that being, you know, quote unquote, taken care of by the, you know, authority in medicine and business, is not really a path that I want to be on personally. And I think more and more people understand that and they're opting out of the system. If enough people opt out of the system collapses.
Right.
And I think that's where we're headed.
I think one.
I'm just aghast because in the past short while you've like put a synopsis and a kind of a synopsis of the content and the message of our previous 100 and some odd shows with respect to what's happening in mm-hmm. our world and expansion of consciousness and where we are in time and the reality that people are waking up. I mean, a few years ago, when all this was really just kind of going very nutty in the early 2000s because we had all the 9/11 put everybody into fear and companies were just spitting out products and people were just consuming and not even thinking about it. At the same time, the rest of us were, you know, green, sustainable stuff was coming out, right? And at first we were like, well, how can we really do all of this? And there was so much of this argument, as Julie was saying earlier, oh, it's not going to be economically viable. But now we've had several years go by. Now we've had models being tested. Now we have people in Portland and Seattle and Chicago doing things. And through your site, they're connecting with one another and saying, this can work. And the most important thing that we need to be doing at this point while we're weaving this planet's consciousness together is sharing those best practices amongst the people. You say the wisdom of the crowds earlier. Yeah, because it's the people that need to be re-empowered to make those choices that are affecting them and to bring it back from the few, the very few that have been providing for us from whom we have been consuming unconsciously. But now we must, and it is inevitable that we wake up and get this reality and apply our historical knowledge and information into the present moment. So eventually, whether you have money and you're very conscious and you're awake now and you're being very empowered of your choices, or even if, unfortunately, you're not able to be that a choice, at some point, you have to integrate into your knowledge bank in that moment. Is this going to serve me? Is this choice going to serve me? Is this one of 187 next cheeseburgers that I'm going to eat impact me down the road? All this, I mean, people are talking about this, and the more that we make it socially normal and acceptable to talk about our reality together, the more that we can all get together to help weave human consciousness and our existence together to a more sustainable way for everybody and everything.
Right. And Martin, that's totally the key. The key is to get out into a larger and larger group of people with this message. And I, you know, one of the problems that I suffer from is like when I get on my soapbox, I don't stop. And people don't want to, they don't want to hear that. They, you know, your friends that aren't in the movement, you know, don't want to be in a movement.
Right.
They don't want to be green. They want to, but you know, it's the language, right? Do you want to be healthy?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Do you want to have jobs in your local community? Do you want to think that your kids are going to grow up in an environment where they can be employed? Mm-hmm. And who doesn't want the positive inspirational stories? Like, you know, where are the stories today of Martin Luther King's and, mm-hmm. you know, the RFK's and, you know, the Apollo mission? And where is that energy and excitement? I turn on the news and all I see is, you know, death, violence, you know, and then in the last mm-hmm. 5 minutes, I get the feel-good story that hooks me so I come back tomorrow, maybe in hopes of something better.
Right.
So I think that there's another one of our media properties is an animation that we've created. And part of the thinking behind that is that we want to put something out into the mainstream that is not doesn't hit people over the head, doesn't make them completely, you know, trade in all of their vehicles for a scooter, you know, doesn't make them reevaluate their entire lives. We just want to get people to just want to crack the door mm-hmm. because you know how this works is that you crack the door just a little bit and once you walk through that door, you can never walk back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start one for me, I started learning about organics when I got to California. I grew up on the East Coast and, you know, our vegetables were potatoes and French fries, potatoes, and maybe a burger garnish. And that's what I ate for salads. Most of our stuff came from California and shipped over sort of not quite ripened so it wouldn't rot on the loading docks in New York. So now I came out here, and all of a sudden I had my first avocado, and you know, my mouth just went alive. And I met a lot of farmers. I had a business previously called Pasta Paradiso, which was an organic vegetarian vegan pasta company, which I did for a couple of years with a partner of mine. And it was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot about not eating inorganic strawberries because they were coated in methyl bromide. Mm. And all I remember was this farmer, and his name was Joe, Farmer Joe, and he told me, don't eat these inorganic strawberries, they'll make you sterile. And I never forgot that.
Wow.
And that, you know, it was my impression. And now I think we've banned methyl bromide, but it's alive and well south of the border. Mm. We get all of our strawberries out of season. And there's no way to wash it off the fruit because it's so porous.
Mm-hmm.
So once you start learning a little bit, you want to learn a little bit more.
Yes.
And a little
yeah.
bit more. And we see this on our website. The some of the most heavily trafficked categories are in food. So it's first about what you put in your body. And then we start seeing, you know, body care products and what you put on your body.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's furnishings and what you put around your body. And, you know, what happens eventually is you finally make it out of your house and you start thinking about your community and then your neighborhoods and then your wider area, right? So
right.
it just spreads until mm-hmm. finally, you know, you get to a point in time where you're thinking about you don't want to buy that $8 shirt in Walmart because you know that it was made in China in mm-hmm. a factory that is poisoning, you know, some downstream river there because EPA laws haven't caught up over there. And I think that, you know, some of the behavior of American-based companies where when these things get banned here, we don't put them to sleep.
Right.
We ship them overseas.
Yeah.
And we use the stuff in places that don't have laws.
Mm-hmm.
If it's wrong, it's wrong.
Right.
You know, and if it's wrong, it's wrong, and you find something else to do, you'll make money in another way. And I think that the web and the transparency that it offers and people coming together, so you've got someone in Guatemala that can come to the website and say, hey, you know, this isn't such a great company because over here they sell da-da-da-da,
mm-hmm.
You start ending up with some perfect information, which we've never had before. And I think it must be very scary for businesses today because they don't control their brands anymore.
Mm.
Their brands are being controlled by the people. And if you just take a few minutes and share your voice on our website or someone else's website or talk to your friends or just don't sit in isolation with your ideas because there are probably a lot of people that share your opinions and your ideas, and they're valuable. Your voice is really necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we all remember Dolphin Safe Tuna.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when that information got out, you know, millions of people made a different choice.
It was a great example.
In that moment, mm-hmm. and companies were affected, and mm-hmm. it's happening all over today. Julie?
I think, like you said, when you get a little crack in the armor and you realize that, ooh, there must be a better way to do this one thing, like, say, the tuna, and then you realize, oh, what about all these other areas I don't really know anything about, like the car I drive and the energy sources, and you then find that there are people that spend their whole life learning about that. So when you go on one of these websites, you can learn from everyone else who might specialize or has spent a lot of time studying something. So very quickly you can say, okay, these are the types of people that have a similar mindset. And in these different areas, this is what they've found out after their years of study. I don't have to spend years of study. I know that I can go to some of these sources like SustainLane and talk to similar people and get ideas in other areas and very rapidly make a lot of changes that serve yourself and the planet.
Yeah, it's like a jigsaw puzzle, mm-hmm. and you're holding one piece.
Right.
And you walk over to the, you know, the collective game board, and you put it in, and all of a sudden you see it's a picture of a waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd never get that idea of holding your one piece.
Right.
So, this time in history will lead to sort of a collective consciousness because we can information travels so quickly now, and it's so easy for all of us to gain a holistic view of what's going on if we're all sharing our little pieces.
That's
absolutely
exactly it. Sharing our little pieces, connecting with one another, connecting with like-oriented individuals, and weaving together all these people that are beginning to think this way. And that's essentially why we created this Healthful Living Model, kind of as a way to kind of direct that emerging consciousness into these six major areas that we're all sort of working towards nurturing the health of in our world, for our mind and our body and all the different areas of life. So people can come to your site and get information about those choices for themselves, businesses, governments, government level, local level, all regard, and anything else about SustainLane.com that we haven't covered in our last 55 minutes that we should let people know about before they log on and check it out?
Well, we're a fun group of people. We're based in San Francisco. There's about 25 of us, and the employees really make the company. They're there because they want to be there, mm-hmm. and they want to make a difference. And you know, they're bright and they're motivated and they're passionate. And we have no shortage of ideas. So we're always coming up with ideas, but we'd love to hear more. Mm. And if your listeners out there have ideas on media that they'd like to see created in the green or sustainable space, just send me an email. It's james@sustainlane.com.
I have one idea. I want something called like the political scorecard, where you can see how politicians said that what they said they were going to do on an issue and actually how they voted on
accountability.
Issues. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be great. That would absolutely be great.
So.
And then, of course, there's the organizational consciousness quotient, but that's for a different show.
Right.
We've been on today with James Elson. He's the CEO of Sustain Lane, an independent green media company located here in San Francisco. You can hear everything else about this show, which I think I could synopsize as the good news.
Yes.
About what's really going on in our world to help make life for all of us.
It's a great show
place.
For the fourth, right after the 4th of July, our independence, our freedom, our new version of ourselves emerging in a very positive way, which is nice to hear people doing something and all of those wonderful things. So thank you so much for being here and sharing all this wonderful information today.
Well, it was a pleasure. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Martin. Great
you
show.
You can hear this show and all past shows at realitysandwichradio.com. We'll be back next week with the author of 365 Ways to Change the World.
All
so
right.
We're directly on target. We'll be back then. Thanks.